Hello, Anna. I just wanted to start off by saying thank you for your time. I really appreciate you being here today and sharing your experience with us. The work you do for the adoptee community is so incredibly important, and I can't wait to learn more about it. If at any point you do feel uncomfortable, feel free to stop me and we can end it whenever you want. Besides that, I'm very excited to start our conversation. First of all, tell me a little about yourself, Anna. How did you become involved in adoptee activism?
Yeah, so thank you so much, Maggie, for inviting me to this archive process and everything. So my name is Anna Gilstrap, and I am an adoptee from China. I was adopted at 11 months old, and I was adopted from Wuhan, China. And I was adopted transracially by a white family. And so the adoption process to me was pretty straightforward. It wasn't There was no bumps in the road or anything. But it wasn't until I reached my teen years where I started to question or come out of the adoptee fog, which is a term used in the adoptee community to kind of represent why like coming to terms with your adoption story and coming to terms with your adoption history and identity as an adoptee. And so when I was a teenager, I started questioning a lot, and that's kind of when I started really reaching out to other organizations and other people like me. I was also in a C so my adoption agency was CCAI, and I was in their cultural language school. And the cultural language school had a lot of adoptees, and I kind of started reaching out to a lot of them, talking about my history as an adoptee and kind of my feelings towards adoption. And just like all of these questions that came up to me, like why did my birth parents abandon me, or why was I relinquished? Why did my adoptive parents decide to adopt me? And just all of these questions came up, and I started conversing with other adoptees. And then when I was about 17, I decided to go on a heritage tour, or not a heritage tour, but it was like a service trip. And the service trip was for adoptees who wanted to help out in an orphanage in China. And I decided to apply, and it was through the Adoptine CCAI organization. And so I got in, and I actually got to go to Wuhan, my birth town. And so there were about 29 other girls with me, and we kind of just experienced life in Wuhan and experienced life like as service people in an orphanage. And we got to converse with a lot of the orphans in the orphanage, and then we got to talk to a lot of the teens and some people who have aged out for not being adopted anymore, because in China you have to be below the age of 14. I'm not sure if it changed, but there's some rules that go along with that. And so there were just a bunch of stories, and my friends and I, after the trip, we decided to create an organization called In Between that supported Asian American adoptees or Asian Americans who didn't feel like they belonged within the binary Asian or American culture. And so we did that, and I became the editor in chief of that national organization. and it was a social organization. It wasn't an official nonprofit or anything. And then I also decided to make a club at my university, at Regis University at the time, concerning in between. And so that's kind of how I got started in activism, was just going to China and working at an orphanage for the summer. And it was really, really eye-opening and really emotional. But yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. Wow, it sounds like the experience going to China was like a very grounding experience. I'm curious to see, like, what was that experience like? Could you speak more about, like, what's the most important takeaway from this trip? And if you feel comfortable, was there like a specific individual at the orphanage you connected most with?
Yeah, so there was a lot that went on in the service trip. It was very, very emotional and very bonding for all of us. Even though there were 30 other adoptees, we all felt like we were connected, and we all felt like we were really, really close, and we all talk to each other and everything. It was, so the orphanage was, it was pretty, it wasn't like you see in the movies. It was very like, it was very like the, it was very nice. It was a very nice orphanage. And like the children had a lot of different resources and everything. We don't know if that's like the orphanage that they decided to take us to because it was so nice, you know, but there were a lot of children there who really spoke to me, and really, really made an impact in my life. There was, there were two sisters, who, were very, very close with each other. And, one of them, was almost to the age of 14, and the other one was younger, and they were in the process of getting an adoption. But then, like, one day the older sister turned 14, and so her adoption process was terminated completely. And so the other sister decided to terminate her adoption as well because she didn't want to leave her sister. And that was really, really hard for me to have to hear, and hard for me to, I guess, process. And it kind of brought up questions like, what if I had a sister? What if I had a brother or like other siblings? And where are they exactly? So it brought up those kind of questions. And then there was another girl at the orphanage who had a major heart disease, and she had such a major severe heart disease that her complexion was always like kind of a bluish tint. And so I think something happened where she was trying to get a surgery or something, and they didn't have enough money for the surgery. And so that was pretty heartbreaking to have to know that she was going to pass on soon. That was really heartbreaking because she was about 13, I think. And then, yeah, just other small stories. They were all really impactful to me. But yeah, I think the orphanage, working there, every day we came back from the orphanage, and all of us would just start crying because it was so emotional and so like emotionally labor intensive. And it was really special though. It was a lot, and I still keep in contact with the people who I went to China with on the service trip, and we like wish each other happy birthdays every year, and we have a mini celebration of the anniversary of when we went to China together. So yeah, it's really cool.
Thank you so much for sharing. From what you've been telling me, it seems like these are all, quote unquote, small stories, but they have had such a big, enormous and significant impact on you guys. I wanted to ask about your questions about, potential siblings. Have you been able to answer these questions?
Yeah, so actually there is a really good resource. I'd have to look at it though, but it's for adoptees who want to find their birth family, and it's like different private investigators that reside in China, and you can contact them through WeChat or like Gmail or your email or something, and they can find your birth parents or birth family. And so I was thinking about doing that a lot, but there were some questions that came up, why exactly did they my birth family relinquish me at such a young age, and would they even want to see me? Would they even want to contact me? And is it safe to do so even? Is it safe for them to contact me? And so I'm still kind of thinking through it, and I still have the contact information of the private investigator, and she says, like, whenever you're ready, whenever you're emotionally ready, I can start this process for you. I started a finding poster with a WeChat group. And so they kind of post my finding poster on Weibo or different social media sites in China.
Yeah, I think this is like a very emotionally taxing experience, especially for adoptees. So take all the time you need in the world because there's obviously no rush. And this is such an important part of, these identities that there can't be any rush to it. Yeah. So you talked a bit about using the word, I guess, relinquish. In popular media, I see people using the word like abandon. Is there like a significant when you're using these words pertaining to the adoptee community?
Yeah, so relinquished. I think it depends on where you are with your trauma recovery journey. A lot of people want to use the word relinquished because it doesn't sound as potent, or it sounds more politically correct. Abandoned is mainly for me. I like to use the word relinquished when I'm talking about like just with just one-on-one with someone, but when I'm like with my therapist, I use the word abandoned because it holds that kind of reality, I guess, and it kind of holds that weight where there's a lot of trauma that goes with it, and there's a lot of trauma that goes with abandonment, and to face that trauma you need to kind of name it, name the trauma, and name what you're going through in order to heal from that trauma.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. The words you use, I think, are very meaningful, and I think they do have a lot of impact for the adoptee themselves. I want to learn more about what it means to you to be a transracial adoptee. How does that part of your identity play into your role as editor-in-chief for In Between?
Can you repeat that question again? Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. I wanted to ask, what does it mean to you to be a transracial adoptee, and how does that part of your identity play into your role as editor-in-chief for In Between?
For In Between, being a transracial adoptee kind of correlates to the aspect of me being kind of taken away from my roots as my heritage as Chinese, and then going towards going to more of like a white upbringing. And so it's a lot of for the editor-in-chief position at In Between, I did a lot of research on resources for transracial adoptees and resources for international adoptees and specifically Asian Americans. And so that was a really big aspect of why I decided to start In Between. After I started In Between, I kind of realized that, or not started, but I kind of started In Between at my university, and then my friends started the national organization In Between. So after I started In Between at my university, I decided that, well, I kind of realized that there were other adoptees that weren't transracial adoptees and who weren't international adoptees like me. And I thought that that was really interesting, and that I wanted to know if we had the same kind of questions, if we had the same type of inquiries and trauma and everything. And so that's kind of how I developed Adoptees Unite, was to reach the full holistic adoptee community. And so that's kind of how I started In Between, or started Adoptees Unite,
Yeah.
and why being transracial was kind of a stepping stone towards Adoptees Unite.
Yeah, speaking of Adoptees Unite, I wanted to ask, like, why is it important for adoptees to have this connected community online that you've established through Adoptees Unite?
Yeah, so there are a lot of organizations out there who do support for the adoptive parents, and who do support for adoptees and foster care youth simultaneously. But there aren't very many for specifically adoptees. And that's kind of why I decided to create Adoptees Unite, so that adoptees can have this safe space, this brave space as well, in order to process their trauma with other adoptees in a non-professional setting, and also to share their experiences and share their questions as well. I think it's important because there are a lot of adoptees out there who don't feel like they belong in either of their cultures. Even if they're domestic and non-transracial adoptees, there's still that cultural imbalance between different families and different regions in their country. And so there's also the aspect of just we as humans long for a community, and we want to have a community of people who can help us through different traumas and different aspects of those traumas. And sometimes the only way to help a person through something is to experience it yourself. And since we've all experienced the trauma related to adoption, we can kind of help each other through different questions that we have concerning that.
Yeah, I genuinely really agree with you about like the need for resources specifically for adoptees. And so I wonder, what are some challenges that you faced in establishing and growing this organization?
Yeah, so some of the challenges that I faced were getting the word out there, kind of like advertising, I guess, advertising that we have a community of adoptees and we have a safe space for people like us. Advertising that, and also just different like our staff, like we're a solely volunteer-based organization, and so there aren't very many people out there who have heard of this organization and who have expressed interest in being volunteers. We do have a content team. We have a diversity, equity, and inclusion team, and we have an adminship team and a moderator team for our online space. But it's still like a huge thing to undertake, and we're always in constant need of staff and volunteers. And so that's a really big aspect of Adoptees Unite is our staff and our volunteers.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with all these initiatives that these like volunteer staff have been creating. Like with initiatives like the Adoptees Unite Scholarship Fund, I'm curious to see what the ultimate goal you envision for Adoptee Unite is, both in terms of reach and its impact on the adoptee community as a whole.
Yeah, so Adoptees Unite, my vision personally for Adoptees Unite, in terms of like the future, the way future is to fully fund adoptees through higher education. That would be an amazing goal for Adoptees Unite to do, to have these scholarships that can fully fund adoptees. Or maybe even work with specific universities to fully fund adoptees throughout their higher education, with the help of donors and other resources. That would be amazing because a lot of adoptees have certain aspects of their lives where they can't pursue higher education sometimes. Just maybe it's because their passions don't align with their adoptive family's passions, and so their adoptive family may not fund them, or just other personal issues. There's also the aspects that we want to fund adoptees through searching for their birth family. We would really love to find donors or different scholarship opportunities where we can fully fund adoptees through DNA testing and the private investigators to help find their birth family. And then we would really like to grow our Instagram account to make it so that it's more educational as well. I mean, I feel like a lot of our resources and a lot of our Instagram content is pretty content heavy. And so I would really like to keep that up and to keep up making it a more educational experience for the followers.
Yeah, speaking of these different projects, are there any specific campaigns or projects that Adoptees Unite is currently working on? And how can individuals interested in supporting or getting involved can contribute to these efforts?
Yeah, so with the Adoptees Unite Scholarship Fund, this year we're kind of in a limbo right now with our scholarship. It was supposed to open this November, this month, but we didn't have enough contributors to or donors to donate for the scholarship. And so we're kind of in a limbo right now. And then other aspects of that, we're trying to broaden our partnership opportunities as well. And so we're partnering with, we've been partnering with organizations like Sisters of China, My China Roots. We've been partnering with other life coaches as well, adoptee life coaches specifically. And we actually have a life coach who is currently working with us, and they are offering their services for Adoptees Unite and adoptees members, adoptee members for life coaching. And so we're kind of trying to work with other kind of life coaches and healthcare professionals to help adoptees have that community and also those resources to help them through trauma and to help them through their questions.
Yeah. So outside of the scholarship fund, what do you hope to get out of long-term these partnerships with life coaches or big organizations like My China Roots?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to really grow Adoptees Unite into an organization that has a bunch of resources for adoptees, just holistically adoptees, not specifically, maybe not specifically like Chinese adoptees or not specifically like international or transracial, but like every adoptee can come and find these resources and find these mental health or life coaches and find these scholarships that they can apply to or that they can find other aspects of our community that they may resonate with, and to just find a community of adoptees and to understand that they're not alone. And that's kind of the big goal of Adoptees Unite, is to really push that adoptees are not alone and that we're a community and we're not like just a sole person. We're a huge community that can help you, and
yeah, I think you've definitely been able to achieve that, because looking at the Adoptees Unite Instagram page, there is a strong sense of community that's being built. And I'm curious to see, given the digital nature of Adoptees Unite, have there been any innovative approaches that you've integrated into the platform to overall enhance the online experience for adoptees?
Yeah, I think Discord has been really helpful for us. Initially, Adoptees Unite was actually a group chat. It was just a small like I think it was like a WhatsApp group chat, and then people ended up saying, oh, Anna, you should like do this on Discord because it has like so many channels that you can create and so many other just like resources that you can provide for adoptees. And so I looked into Discord and I was like, oh, this looks cool. And so I decided to create like the community around Discord. And there were a ton of people that started flooding in, and there were a ton of adoptees who were very lost, especially during COVID. This was all during the COVID pandemic. There were a lot of adoptees who were coming out of the fog, and they needed a community. And so we kind of put it out there on Reddit, and we said, hey, please join. We're a community of adoptees who want to talk about our questions concerning adoption. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it grew.
Yeah, you mentioned this adoptee fog. Can you speak more to as to what it is and how it is significant for adoptees?
Yeah, so adoptee fog coming out of it is the process of kind of like kind of accepting your adoption story and finding out more about certain aspects of adoption that you may not have heard of before or been aware of or even accepted. Adoptee fog is mainly just like the suppression of all of those things, all of those realizations about adoption. There could be like a very popular example is the fact that a lot of or some adoptees have been this might be a trigger warning, but a lot of adoptees may have been trafficked. And so that kind of aspect of the fog is to suppress that. But coming out of the fog is saying, okay, I know that there is trafficking that occurred during my adoption story, and I want to delve deeper into that. So adoption fog is kind of like the suppression, and then coming out of it is like the realizations.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that very complex topic. I also wanted to ask, like, how big is the Adoptees Unite team now compared to what it was when you first started out through like Discord and a WhatsApp group chat?
So our team right now, let me look actually. I think there are about 20 members of our staff right now. But it used to be like mods, and there was just me. So like probably six people. And there was six people that we started off with during the 2021 year. And so then it kind of grew into like 20 members. So yeah, it's a lot. I feel like managing the staff is a lot of work, but it's super rewarding because I have so many people who are just as passionate about adoptee activism as I am. And it's really cool to see all the growth that happens within our staff and within our volunteer work and everything.
Yeah, how did you initially come in contact with the six people you started the organization with?
Yeah, so I got in contact with them through Reddit, I think. I put out a like an advertisement about that I needed staff or volunteers for Adoptees Unite, and there was an application open, and so a lot of them were already a part of Adoptees Unite, so it was easy for me to kind of tell, oh, this is this person or that is that person. But there were some people who I didn't know and who weren't in Adoptees Unite yet, but were still adoptees. And so, yeah, just adoptees from all over the world. We have a staff member from Belgium. We have a lot of people from all different parts of America, and we have some people from the UK. And so, yeah, it's pretty diverse.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a very international organization, and I do hope that you continue to grow it. You also mentioned that a lot of the posts that Adoptees Unite puts out is content heavy. Has there been any controversy over how these posts are perceived and received by both people within and outside the adoptee community?
There was a post that we did a while ago. It was about a boy named Landon, an adoptee named Landon, who was murdered by their adoptive family, by his adoptive family. And that was a pretty big post. It was really kind of dark. And very heavy for all of us, and it took a lot for us to gather the information on Landon and do the graphics for it as well, and kind of keep our mental health in check because, you know, this is an adoptee from our community who passed away, and it was just very, very sad. And a lot of our mental health was kind of bad during that time, trying to get through this post. But we were able to kind of come together and say, like, a lot of people need to hear about this because there is a problem with adoptees dying by suicide or being or by homicide or other abuse that goes on within the adoptee community. And so we need to shed a light on that. And that was a pretty big post. And another post was let's see. Oh, the Adoption Barbie post. We posted that during the time that Barbie came out, the movie, and there were so many adoptees that started posting pictures on Adoptees Unite about this white doll holding a little tiny baby who was supposed to be like Chinese, and it was called the Adoption Barbie, and we kind of renamed it as the White Savior Barbie. There was a lot of controversy with that because a lot of adoptees say, well, this is a portrayal of my adoption and I'm proud of my adoption and I feel connected to my adoptive parents and this is just a very special and sacred journey for me. And so this doll is a representation of that. But then there were some other adoptees who believed that it was kind of like a commodification of adoptees and of people of color. And like when you see the doll holding the baby, it's kind of like an accessory. Like Barbie always has an accessory. And so there was that controversy, and it was pretty big. But I feel like it needs to be said, like these types of controversies, controversial topics need to be said within the adoptee community and need to be kind of brought forth.
Considering the diversity of adoptee experiences that you've touched upon, either through the Barbie situation or the Landon situation, how do you ensure that Adoptees Unite remains a supportive and inclusive space for all?
Yeah, so we recently launched our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force committee called the Mosaic Team. And we named it Mosaic because there's like a mosaic of adoptees that come together and unite. And so that's kind of why we named it Mosaic Team. But they are responsible for ensuring that all of our posts are inclusive. And their main purpose is to promote inclusivity within Adoptees Unite and to ensure that the members are staying inclusive and promoting productive conversations within all of our chats. So there's the Mosaic Team that we recently launched, and we actually launched that like 2 months ago, I think, or a month ago. But yeah.
I'm curious to see where the Mosaic team goes, so keep me updated. Going back to creating the post about Landon and your experience on the visit to the orphanage in China, these are all heavy topics that are often difficult to grapple with. How do you keep your mental health in check?
Yeah, so I keep my mental health in check by talking with other people. I feel like talking is a big important aspect for mental health. I talked with other people within Adoptees Unite, and I talked to some of my friends from the orphanage trip, the service trip. And I also talk with a therapist as well. She's a trauma-informed therapist, not really an adoption-focused therapist, but she is trauma-informed. So I do talk to her a lot. And what I normally do is during the pandemic, I feel like I internalized a lot of the struggles of other people and a lot of the trauma that other people have endured, instead of separating myself from their trauma. And so I've worked a lot with trying to separate that aspect, separate myself from other people's trauma while still maintaining empathy and like reaching out to other people as well.
Yeah, thank you for sharing all these important approaches to keeping your mental health in check, because I know it's a really important conversation to have surrounding the adopted communities, but often it is really difficult concepts to grapple with. I want to pivot our conversation to your more current role as a university student. I know you're currently a senior, so I wanted to ask if any of the work you do in adoptee activism have carried over to your student career, and have your aspiration evolved in any way?
So I am currently a university student at University of Utah as a senior, and I study biology with an emphasis in biochemistry. I think there's a lot that goes on with my background as a scientist, but really I think Adoptees Unite has allowed me to understand and grapple with the activism within science as well, and promote my voice as a scientist and as an adoptee activist. So it's been, it's kind of like a stepping stone towards amplifying my voice through different opinions that I have as an adoptee, and through like liberating myself with science and everything.
100%. I want to go back to your involvement in this bicultural organization, which you founded called In Between. How do you see these initiatives impact the experiences of Asian Americans who may disconnect from their Asian and American identities?
So what exactly do you mean by what exactly do you mean by that? Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. I just wanted to understand what the ultimate goal for In Between is.
Okay. The ultimate goal for In Between, I think for all of us is to build a voice for ourselves as Asian Americans, and to feel like we belong somewhere. I feel like a lot of Asian Americans, whether they're adoptees or not, they feel like they don't belong in either culture. There's like the aspect of language. Like I don't know the language as well as a native speaker, a person who was raised by Asian parents or raised in China. I don't know enough Mandarin to you know, speak it fluently. And so there are some times where I go to China or I come in contact with someone who has been raised in that environment, and I feel like I don't belong completely in the Chinese culture. And then there's also the aspect of the American culture where, you know, I don't look white, and I know Chinese, and so there's this disconnect of, well, who am I? Like, who exactly am I as an Asian American? It's kind of like conflicting identities. And so In Between is kind of trying to mold those identities together as one.
Yeah, speaking of which, what do you want adoptees and Asian American youth to take away from the work you do?
So I would really like the adoptee community and adoptees in general to know that they're not alone. I remember feeling really alone during the pandemic, and feeling really alone during my teen years in general, because I didn't feel like there were any adoptees who felt the way I felt and who had the same questions that I had. There were a lot of adoptees who I was with in the language school who didn't really want to talk about those issues or topics, and that's completely fine. But I was kind of in the stage where I was trying to come out of the fog. And so I kind of want to try to amplify the voices of adoptees who want to ask these questions and who want to kind of push the boundaries of what society views as adoption through rose-colored glasses and everything. I would like adoptees to know that they're not alone, and that their voices are heard, and that there's no question that shouldn't be asked.
To further realize the vision that you have, are there any specific goals or projects that you hope to pursue in the future?
Yeah, I think the main project that we would love to push for the future is the scholarships. I think that the scholarships for higher education for adoptees is a big one, especially since adoptees feel like they shouldn't apply for scholarships concerning immigration, or they don't feel like they really fit the narrative of an immigrant. There aren't very many scholarships for adoptees. That would be something that we would really like to push for in the future. And also more collaborations with mental health professionals and life coaches would be a big one.
Yeah, in your work with adoptees, have you identified any common themes or reoccurring issues within the adoptee community that you believe require more attention or advocacy?
I think education is a big one. Educating other people, non-adoptees, about adoptee issues is a really big, big aspect of why I wanted to create an Instagram account for Adoptees Unite, because there, even some of my non-adoptee friends, there are a lot who say, oh, adoptees just should be grateful. They should be grateful. They shouldn't want to find their birth family. Or why would you want to find your birth family if you have family now, or something like that? Just pushing for education about adoptee issues is a big one.
You mentioned this idea of other people believing that adoptees should be inherently grateful. What are some of the other big misconceptions that people have about the adoptee community?
A lot of the misconceptions. So there's a lot, but if I could summarize it, I'd say that a lot of people think that the adoptee community is very exclusive, and very very entitled, I guess. There's a lot of talk, especially with my own friends who are non-adoptees sometimes even, who say stuff like, oh, why do you want to find your birth family if you have such a great family now? And why do you not let other non-adoptees join your adoptee group? Because they want to know, like, they want to be educated on this. And why don't you let non-adoptees into Adoptees Unite, the server? And my answer to that is, adoptees have specific traumas that we don't want other people to, we don't want other people to have access to that. And especially with other adoptees who are minors, there's been some adoptive parents that have come into the server pretending to be an adoptee and then spying on their kid. And that's been a really hard thing to try to get away from and try to decrease, to alleviate. But there needs to be a community that not only supports adoptees but also protects adoptees. I think that the protection aspect is a big one.
Yeah. What advice would you give to people in general wanting to get involved or contribute to adoptee activism?
So I think if you're not an adoptee, I think the biggest thing that you can do is to share social media information online through like your posts or through stories to just amplify the adoptee voices out there and to follow different adoptee Instagram accounts or adoptee Facebook groups or Twitter, which is now X. The X different accounts and just social media in general. I think since a lot of adoptees are now switching to social media to amplify their voice, I think social media is a big contribution to amplifying adoptee voices. And so that would be a good place to start. Another thing is to do research. Do research on like there's this thing where children can internalize the trauma that they had in the past. And so there's this book called The Body Keeps the Score, and it's about how we are physically remembering a lot of our trauma. And there's that aspect as well. And for adoptees, I think really putting your voice out there is a big aspect of what you can do to get into activism is to put your voice out there and to contact other adoptee activist groups and to really delve deep into your own trauma as well, and to share that story with other people is a big one.
Do you want to just share the link of Adoptees Unite?
Yeah, Adoptees Unite is their link is adoptees.org. And so you can just go on there. It's I think it's a card website as well. So if you do adoptees.org, then it'll automatically transfer you to our card website. And so it's we're trying to figure out like a better website platform, but for now it's card, so
To close out, I'm very interested in your name. I know through our correspondence that you have a Chinese name as well. If you do feel comfortable, could you please share a bit about the significance of your name?
The significance of my name. So my name, my Chinese name was from the orphanage. So the orphanage gave me the name Li Qiao, and I think the orphanage director's name was Li, and then Qiao because apparently I was very cheeky as a child and very I don't know how to describe it, but I guess I was just cheeky. And so I have the name Li Chow to signify like kind of smart, kind of like cheeky, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing with me. This has been such an enlightening conversation. And let me take a second to say that Your dedication to the cause for adoptees and Asian Americans alike is very inspiring. It is really rare to come across a youth organization that is continuing to build on the sense of communities for adoptees. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up today?
Not that I can think of at the moment, but I will email you if I have anything else.
Yeah, all right. Feel free to reach out to me whenever. Thank you again for this conversation.
Thank you so much.